Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
I'm John Fugelsang. This is Tell Me Everything, the little show at What the Hell O'Clock that brings good trouble to the right-wing bubble. We are so happy you are with us to commemorate the 82nd birthday of Miss Barbara Streisand. To that end, we'll only be talking about Barbara tonight. We'll only be playing music from Yentl. No other Streisand vehicles, Yentl only. It's also the 90th birthday of Shirley MacLaine, and Mumia Abu-Jamal turns 70 years old this date. Our executive producer is Chris Hauselt. He is running this show from the South Carolina Bureau. The great Thea Harper produces our show from the Brooklyn Bureau. I come to you from Manhattan. Again, our number for the next 3 hours is 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT. We love Wednesdays here because we have some of our favorite regulars. Bob Seska will be here, star of one of the best political and music podcasts in the game. The God Squad joins us in hour number two to take apart all things white Christian nationalist. And Dr. Tracy Pearson is here with her legal expertise, slaying fools in hour number three. One more time with our number for you guys to join the dialogue, because we love to hear from you. It's 866-997-4748, 866-997-GRIT. We've got so much to get to tonight. I had so many news stories to share with you. I'm sure you've been following the news all day, but every now and then, having a show here at the break of dawn when they put us on the air, you catch those stories that break late in the day. Like an Arizona grand jury that, after 5 p.m. Eastern, indicted 18 allies of Donald Trump for their efforts to subvert and steal the 2020 election. And what a list of allies it is. Former Trump chief of staff Mark Meadows, former Trump attorney Rudy Giuliani, former Trump campaign operative Mike Roman, former pal of me and Chris here at SiriusXM Boris Epstein. Finally, Chris, a hometown boy makes good in the Trump crime syndicate. Finally, someone we've worked with has gotten indicted. Former chair of the Arizona Republican Party, Kelly Ward, is one of the 11 defendants. Trump lawyer John Eastman, Trump lawyer Jenna Ellis, Trump lawyer Christina Bob, and an unindicted co-conspirator. We have no idea who that could refer to. The indictment includes felony counts of conspiracy, fraud, and forgery, and it pretty much nails you-know-who. The former host of Celebrity Apprentice as an unindicted co-conspirator. The defendants and unindicted co-conspirators scheme to prevent the lawful transfer of the presidency to keep unindicted co-conspirator one in office against the will of Arizona's voters. That's in the 58-page indictment. Now, a lot of the names are redacted, but the document makes very clear who they are by describing their roles, like Mark Meadows, Giuliani. Interestingly enough, Ken Chesbro, who we expected to see indicted here, the attorney who helped devise Trump's whole fake elector strategy, he's described as unindicted co-conspirator four. Rather interesting that Ken Chesbro, who flipped and made a deal in Georgia, is unindicted here. One can only assume that Ken's cooperating, because the only defendants whose names are visible in the version of the indictment released by the Attorney General's office in Arizona are 11 Republicans who falsely pretended to be the state's presidential electors, even though Joe Biden had won in the state. And that includes Kelly Ward, State Senators Anthony Kern, State Senator Jake Hoffman, Arizona's RNC committeeman Tyler Bowyer. These might not be familiar names to most of us, but it's really interesting because I bet all the names I read before of White House officials are. Here you've got the architects of the scheme. You've got the people behind the fake elector fraud to try and steal the election away from the American people. Names we've heard: Rudy Giuliani, Mark Meadows, John Eastman, Boris, Jenna Ellis. And then you've got the local players. One could argue the pawns. There are the Republicans who cooked up the fake elector scheme, and there are the Republicans who signed up to be the fake electors. This may affect the presidential election, but this is going to impact Republican politics in Arizona for a very long time. And this is the fifth prosecution to bring criminal charges over this scheme to upend the 2020 election. Jack Smith charged him with the federal crimes for those efforts. In Georgia, Fannie Willis has charged Trump and many of his allies in the RICO case for their attempts to overturn the results in that state. Michigan and Nevada have also charged Republicans who posed as fake electors in those states. Ken Chesbrough, noticeably not indicted. He's cooperating. And how? Now, it was also a very busy day in Arizona because after 2 weeks of not knowing what's going to happen, the Arizona House of Representatives voted to repeal that 1864 territorial ban on nearly all abortions. Even if the governor, Katie Hobbs, signs a repeal bill, the ban might still take effect anyway, because the state's Supreme Court cleared the way to start enforcing it this month. And thanks to a couple of Republicans, both the House and the Senate in Arizona now have the votes to repeal this ban from 1864. I mean, written by a man who had two wives who were 15. That's who's calling the shots now. So this would reinstate the 2022 law permitting abortions through 15 weeks of pregnancy on the books. I'm telling you, I love Arizona. It was a crazy day there. If you're working in media in Arizona, you're not going home tonight. Also, other side of the country, we saw the oral arguments today in a very important abortion case. And it was really kind of tough to tell how the Supreme Court's going to rule on this one. But this case could have serious implications on the states that have the harshest abortion bans. This was a case over whether Idaho's near total ban on abortion is in conflict with federal law that requires hospitals' emergency rooms to provide life-saving care. And today's arguments involved very complicated overlapping issues that could divide the court's six-member conservative majority, according to the New York Times. Justices Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh are the ones who seem to think doctors could comply with both laws, so there wouldn't be much conflict for the court to resolve. We're not going to know what happens here until June. But I want to get to the real big story that's dominating the news. And that is not what's happening in the Middle East. What's dominating the news is not that the Netanyahu civilian government, in continuing response to the atrocities committed against Israel by Hamas 6 months ago, that the Netanyahu government is systematically using starvation as a weapon of war, that they are stopping the flow of food from getting into Gaza. They're allowing a few trucks now after deliberately murdering World Central Kitchen workers a couple of weeks ago who were being guided by the IDF on their relief mission, and then three separate vehicles blown up. Starvation is a war crime, and America is aiding and abetting in it. And there have been profound concerns over famine happening. Right now, they're letting a couple hundred trucks in a day for 2 million people. Now, the media is not talking about that. The media is talking about protests of that. This is America, where you have to deal with the crimes, and then you have to deal with the people who are upset, not about the crimes, but upset about the protests of the crimes. You know, this is America, where people don't care about the racism and police brutality, but they're really offended at Colin Kaepernick's protest of it. They don't care that George Floyd was murdered by a cop putting his knee on his neck for 9 minutes. They don't like the protests against the murder. You know the folks I'm talking about. You've all got an uncle racist and an aunt dead inside. When it comes to Gaza, we got a lot of Americans who don't care about what's happening to the civilians in Gaza. Over 32,000 deaths, half of them children. We got a lot of pro-life people who don't care about these children, don't care about these lives. They care about these surly, spoiled college students protesting. That's what upsets folks here. And that's where the media goes. So as you guys know, Columbia University has become pretty much the center of this fight over how are you going to police on campus pro-Palestine protesters, even if they're mostly peaceful, which they have been. Now, this is a free speech issue, so wander into the weeds with me. I want to know your thoughts on this. Student protesters at Columbia and other schools are calling for their schools to divest from companies that are funding corporations that are connected to Israel's military operations, to military's historic policies of apartheid on the people of Palestine. And they're asking for the administrators to allow pro-Palestinian protesters to peacefully demonstrate without threatening to discipline their grades. And again, more than 100 Israelis are still held hostage. Hamas are Nazi terrorist monsters, okay? This is the complicated thing. Protesting Hamas doesn't mean you hate Muslims or Palestinian people. Protesting the Netanyahu regime doesn't mean you hate Israelis or Jewish people. Protesting the Trump administration doesn't mean you hate racist or gullible people, but that's another monologue. So the president of Colombia last week ordered the NYPD to sweep the Gaza Solidarity Camp the students had set up. When you go to Columbia, I live a few blocks from there, it's a great big lawn. And after this Columbia president testified before a congressional committee hearing on allegations of anti-Semitism on campus, the next day she ordered the NYPD to sweep the tents. And the cops arrested more than 100 protesters. You heard about it. Ilhan Omar's daughter was one of them. And here's the part I want you to just file away somewhere in your mind. The NYPD chief, John Chell, he talked to the student newspaper, the Columbia Spectator, and this is what he said. The students that were arrested were peaceful, offered no resistance whatsoever, and were saying what they wanted to say in a peaceful manner. That's the chief of the NYPD. On the protests you're hearing all the time at Columbia, the students that were arrested were peaceful, offered no resistance whatsoever, and were saying what they wanted to say in a peaceful manner. Or as Mike Johnson puts it, Columbia has allowed these lawless agitators and radicals to take over. Now, students were clearing out of the encampment, and the school's still trying to contain all the unrest. It's making a lot of hype. It's a lot of noise up here. Tensions are still high. Protesters were gathering today uptown at Broadway at 116th. And House Speaker Mike Johnson decided he would bring some of the most right-wing, anti-sympathy, anti-empathy, Muslim-hating Republicans with him to Columbia for a photo op to wag their fingers at these naughty, young, educated people. And he called for the Columbia president, Manu Shafiq, to resign with all these protests going on. And this is another sign that Republicans are trying to punish prominent universities for free speech issues. We've seen these waves of protests related to the fallout after this war began. And this is another sign the GOP is trying to find a way to use the levers of government to punish universities. Now, I got to say one thing. It's got to feel real good for Mike Johnson to go on camera and demand someone else resign after weeks of his own party demanding he do it. And truth be told, that's the reason Mike Johnson was there. This was nothing but a damage control photo op. He brought along Representative Virginia Fox in North Carolina. You know her, that lady, the shut up lady. Nicole Maliotakis, Anthony Desposito, Mike Lawler. And they got booed and they got heckled for almost the entire 18 minutes of their fake press conference, which they knew would happen. It's why they went. Give a quick listen. Here's Mike Johnson on his field trip to New York City today with a bunch of other Republicans to have a publicity stunt centered around ongoing student protest. Here, Johnson says the National Guard should clean this mess up if the students won't give up and go home.
Have you spoken to the president about bringing in the National Guard? A number of senators have done that. Are you urging the president to do that as well?
My intention is to call President Biden after we leave here and share with him what we have seen with our own two eyes and demand that he take action. There is executive authority that be appropriate. If this is not contained quickly, and if these threats and intimidation are not stopped, there is an appropriate time for the National Guard. We have to bring order to these campuses. We cannot allow this to happen around the country. We are better than this. We are better than this. And I'll ask the president to do that, and I'll tell him that very same thing.
Now, the whole time he was talking, and if you listen to the speech, the students were chanting, "Mike, you suck. Free Palestine. You're a liar. Get off our campus." You can hear people shouting, "Criticism of Israel is not anti-Semitism." At one point, all the students start chanting, "We can't hear you. We can't hear you." And Johnson just says to them, "Enjoy your free speech." He says it does not matter who shouts in our faces. We are going to do what's right by America. He said, "We respect free speech. We respect diversity of ideas. But there is a way to do that in a lawful manner. And that's not what this is." I'm going to remind you again. The chief of the NYPD told the student newspaper at Columbia that the students that were arrested were peaceful, offered no resistance, and were saying what they wanted to say in a peaceful manner. Now, have some students been inappropriate? Yes, they have. Have students used their free speech in destructive ways that I personally don't agree with? Hell yes. Screaming at Jewish students going to class is class A douchebag behavior. God doesn't call you to do that. That doesn't make the situation better in Palestine. And enraging people against your cause makes it harder for the decent people who are supporting the folks in Palestine. When you go being anti-Semitic to Jewish kids trying to go to class, all you're doing is making the anti-Muslim bigots feel justified in being anti-Muslim bigots. I do not side with people who yell mean shit at people. But this is a college campus. There are no reports I know of yet of actual violence. And yet, I've seen people I know say that this represents the worst kind of evil. I have a friend on Facebook, conservative Christian. This is the worst. These protesters are the worst kind of evil. And I'm like, deliberate starvation of the people of Gaza and murdering the World Central Kitchen workers is not, but the protest of it is the ultimate evil. There's a sign at the entrance of the tent camp at Columbia, and it says what their demands are: financial divestment from companies and entities that profit from Israel's war on Gaza. They want an academic boycott of Israeli institutions. They want a public statement from the university calling for an immediate and permanent ceasefire. And Mike Johnson is now the highest ranking person to call for Columbia's president to resign. I'm not here to defend the president of Columbia. I don't care if he does or doesn't resign, but this is all this was about. He came to Columbia to push his worldview. And it's interesting that none of these Republicans had the time to stop by Donald Trump's trial and support him. Oh, wait, but the trial was off. How strange. You got Virginia Fox and you got Mike Johnson and they come to New York City. And oh, darn it, it's just the one day Donald Trump's trial isn't happening. I'm sure they would have gone down to the courthouse and made time on the record to be there for Trump. The whole thing reeks of desperation. The whole thing shows Mike Johnson's fear. This, my friends, was a photo op and nothing more. Mike Johnson desperately needs the right wing to like him again. So he has come to attack some of the Republican Party's most reliable targets for easily displaced rage. You ready? Number one, Muslims. Number two, Palestinian Muslims. Number three, college students. Number four, a non-white female university president. And number five, New York City. He came to wag his finger on camera at the people the Republican Party always wags their fingers at. But Mike just signed a deal to help Israel, to help Ukraine, and he's hated now in the entire party for it. This was nothing but him coming to punch down on easy targets to try to win back the love of the haters. Now, again, let me be clear. 100%, every student has a right to attend class without being harassed. I hear that Columbia is offering Jewish students to do hybrid and stay home the rest of the year. That breaks my heart. It's wrong. They should be able to go to class without being harassed. However, there is this First Amendment thing. We have to get around it. But keep this in mind. Any protester breaking the law should be arrested, right? No controversy. Any protester violating university policy, including hate speech, can and should be sanctioned and expelled. It's not controversial. Anti-Semitism should never be tolerated, right? Just like anti-Islamic slurs and threats shouldn't be tolerated, right? Republicans, right? Anti-Semitism's bad, and the anti-Muslim stuff's bad too, right? Hello? Guys? Anybody praising Hamas? They're horrible people. But is that illegal in the U.S.? I mean, we're having Confederate History Month right now. Confederacy has a much higher body count of murdered humans than Hamas. People are allowed to celebrate the Confederacy and wave a flag for it. But not Hamas. And I hate Hamas. Hamas are evil. But we have this First Amendment. And it's interesting how selective our Republican friends' outrage is. So Donald Trump has Hitler fans, Nick Fuentes and Kanye West, over to his house for a very Nazi Mar-a-Lago Thanksgiving. We hear nothing. Donald Trump says there are very fine people on both sides of the Unite the Right rally, where they were chanting, "Jews will not replace us." Donald Trump engages in anti-Semitic tropes day in and day out, frequently saying that American Jews are more loyal to Israel than the U.S. Charlie Kirk of Turning Point USA can say some of the largest financiers of left-wing anti-white causes are Jews. Anti-white causes. Charlie Kirk blamed Jewish dollars for funding what he called cultural Marxist ideas, and he said that ideology must be cleansed. Candace Owen can say that Hitler was okay until he tried to go global. You can have Hitler aficionado Milo Yiannopoulos speaking on college campuses. When these people were protested on college campuses, we heard Republicans say free speech. They cried First Amendment. Elon Musk can turn Twitter into a Jew-hating Nazi chat room, and we hear free speech, First Amendment. But a couple of spoiled university brats say anti-Semitic insults at a protest of Israeli civilian government policy, and these rat bastards want to call in the National Guard. And when they say call in the National Guard, everyone thinks of Kent State. So do they. They know what they're saying. Mike Johnson is calling to mind fond, warm, fuzzy historic memories of uppity college kids being slaughtered for protesting the wrong things. Mike Johnson knows the dog whistle he's sending. The Netanyahu government is starving these people. The risk of famine is very, very high. It's deliberate starvation as a weapon of war. They murdered the World Central Kitchen workers whose journey they were coordinating. They're only allowing about 200 food shipments a day for 2 million people. We just signed a $25 billion aid package for Israel to continue helping fund this slaughter, and our media is obsessed with college kids who are protesting it. That's the lead story everywhere. We want to know what you guys think. We are at 866-997-4748, 866-997-GRIT, and we'll be back in 1 second with your calls on the great Bob Seska right here on Sirius XM.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. We are celebrating the 90th birthday of Shirley MacLaine. And I'm John Fugelsang. Bob Seska is the host of The Bob Seska Show and Trek Politics, both of which I recommend you add to your regular podcast rotation. He's a regular voice here on The Stephanie Miller Show. He is one of the smartest players in the game and has one of the best podcasts that both manages to combine cool music and good politics. You can go and check out bonus material at his Patreon. Patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. People of Earth, welcome back, Mr. Bob Seska.
Oh, thank you so much, John. You know, I'm glad we're underway now because I can stop cramming this story out of Arizona. about the indictments that were just handed up from
the
grand jury there about the fake elector scheme. Yeah, the Republican Party may be done with the law, but the law isn't done with the Republican Party.
Ooh, yeah. Nice. I use that line a lot. I'm going to steal it. We're very excited here because, you know, we've been watching all of the indictments. And as you know, there have been a lot. I mean, there's been Georgia, you know, there's been the federal indictment. But as I'm really fond of pointing out, Bob, there's also Nevada, there's Michigan. This is going around the country, and this is the first time that Chris and I have had a friend of ours who we've worked with finally get a nomination to the Hall of Fame. Boris Epstein is now on the hook. And we are so proud that a homegrown boy that we used to do radio with here at Sirius XM is now on the hook along with unindicted co-conspirator Trump. He's made the big time.
Exactly. Yeah. And I keep thinking about that scene in Coming to America where Eddie Murphy bumps into the Dukes from Trading Places.
Yes.
I almost said Trading Spaces. Trading Places. Yeah, was the movie. And I'm imagining Rudy Giuliani and Mark Meadows in that place, just waiting for someone to come by to hand them a wad of cash. Because, my God, I can't even imagine where they are right now as far as, you know, legal bills and obviously judgments against them. And so, you know, it couldn't happen to a couple of better guys, huh? You know,
I have
between
to say,
them
like,
and
I
Boris
don't
Epstein
understand.
And yeah.
I'll always admit when I'm wrong, and I'm wrong about stuff now and then. And I really thought that Mark Meadows must have cut a deal with someone to avoid all these headaches, but I guess I was wrong. I mean, Meadows is the one who screwed up and gave all of his text messages to the 9/11 committee. That's why he sued them, because he realized he had stepped in it by cooperating and turning over his records, and he had hung all of his friends. We know so much because of Meadows, because of his stupidity. It's important to remember he, I guess, has not cut a deal with anybody to avoid jail time. I mean, Jenna Ellis cut a deal to avoid jail in Georgia, but I guess she's going to have to do that all over again, too.
Yeah. She was also indicted. The only one that we know of who wasn't indicted is unindicted co-conspirator one, who was Donald Trump. And he is not indicted in Arizona. Lucky him, right? But I mean, it is. Yeah.
But in fairness, there's also unindicted co-conspirator four, who is believed to be Ken Chesbro, who we know has already flipped in Georgia. And the fact that he's not indicted here gives a very strong indication that he has helped the attorney general with an airtight case.
There's a lesson to be learned here, John, and they haven't learned it yet. Essentially, you know, people like Rudy Giuliani and Mark Meadows and Boris Epstein and all these people who surround Donald Trump will perpetually blame, you know, the witch hunt, blame Democratic attorneys general and so forth, Democratic prosecutors for the peril that they find themselves in, when in fact they should be blaming Donald Trump himself. And the lesson has to be, at some point, people around Donald Trump have to take a look around them and say, you know, maybe I'm next. Maybe I shouldn't be hanging out with this serial criminal, this con man who can't not commit crimes and wind us all into the conspiracy. I mean, this is it. All these people are going to jail. And if they're not going to go to prison, they're going to be destitute because they latched their wagons to the Donald Trump shit star. Yeah. And at some point, they've got to learn the lesson. Like, maybe we should cut the tether between us. Maybe we should cut the umbilical cord between us and this unforgivable crook.
I mean,
plenty
have.
Maybe that'd be a smart idea for our future.
But plenty have. I mean, Michael Cohen had to go to jail for it first, and we'll get to him. But from Omarosa on down, there have been a number of figures. Let's talk about all the chiefs of staff. I mean, there have been plenty of people on the inside with Trump. I've never seen a former president have so many members of his cabinet come forward and say he is not fit to hold office. I mean, I think you're right. A lot of people have found a come to Jesus moment here, but I think they probably had pretty steady lives and careers to return to. A lot of opportunistic fuckwits really thought they could ride the Trump train to glory, and they're realizing they should have stayed in their own lane.
Yeah, and there's a number of people who I know for a fact haven't learned their lesson, and that is the upward of 74 million Trump voters out there who are probably going to walk into a voting booth again in November and elect this guy to become the steward of our economy, to become the steward of our national defense, to have purview over not just the Department of Justice, which he's going to take over and be make it part of the White House, make it his own personal Gestapo, but also the National Treasury, which Donald Trump will then begin to hoard taxpayer money for his own wealth, just like kleptocrat Vladimir Putin, Donald Trump's personal mentor and hero and controller. So there are millions and millions of Americans who watch this stuff and see it obviously happening on the news and haven't learned the lesson yet. Maybe we shouldn't attach our votes to this guy. Maybe we shouldn't attach the presidency to this guy. Maybe that's going to turn out badly for the United States, just as it's turned out badly for the Trump Foundation, the Trump Organization, Trump State. You know, the whole Trump empire has crashed. The Truth Central is in the process of crashing right now. And it was like, yeah, maybe this guy should be in charge again. Stupid, stupid, stupid people need to wise up and see the light about this guy and cut the tether, just like Boris Epstein and Rudy Giuliani and Mark Meadows and Jenna Ellis and all these other losers who were too ambitious to see how much of a black hole this guy turned out to be.
I have so many thoughts on everything you just said, because
sorry,
I do agree. Bob, yeah. My first thought is we live in a country where McDonald's is our most popular restaurant. Mm-hmm. Fox News is our most popular source of journalism, and People is our most popular magazine. You're asking me to be surprised that 80 million are still suckered by a reality show racist landlord who steals from vets? I can't be surprised anymore. I mean, Ryan Seacrest has a gold toilet and Van Gogh sold 3 paintings in his life. The dumbness will never shock me anymore, Bob. But here's the thing. When you look at the Pennsylvania primary, which happened last night, and it didn't get a lot of coverage, but the big takeaway is that Donald Trump is not strong in the suburbs. And he won Pennsylvania last night with 83% of the vote. Still, more than 1 in 7 Republican primary voters cast a protest vote against him. At one point, he only had 2/3 of the vote, and Nikki Haley had 1/3 of the vote. Joe Biden got 93% of the Democratic vote, and he's got a protest going on against him and people that were voting deliberately for Dean What's-His-Face just to try to hurt him. Bob, Nikki Haley dropped out of the race almost 2 months ago, and she got 156,000 votes in Pennsylvania yesterday. I bet Trump is more worried about that than anything else that happened today.
Yeah, on top of that, there was a Pennsylvania House race in a district that went to Donald Trump by 28 points. The Democrat came within 11 points of defeating the Republican in that particular district. The Democrats still lost, mind you, but we're talking about a Trump plus 28 district where the Democrat ended up coming pretty damn close, all things considered, to winning in that particular race. So I think one of the biggest scandals of the year, one of the things that we may be talking about in November, December, January, is what the hell is going on with the polls? Once again, we're going to be in this place going, what are they doing? What are they doing wrong specifically? And there are lots of theories along those lines. I know Dr. Tracy Pearson was mentioning that it may actually have something to do with undercounting women. It may have something to do with not updating demographic numbers.
When you have a polling model that relies on people answering landline phones, and a polling model that relies on people answering a cell phone when they don't know who the caller is, you might not be getting the most reliable cross-section of the American electorate. You know what
exactly
I'm saying?
Exactly right. Yeah. And I think one of the reasons why networks and publications keep paying to use these polls and to partner with these pollsters is that they need that kind of horse race tension, that kind of drama to feed viewership, to feed people clicking and sharing and so on, to make sure that we're all on the edge of our seats and this is somehow going to be a thing. And while there may be some unnecessary closeness in this race, where we all look at the RCP average or whatever and we say, well, where the hell, I mean, even if you were to handicap Donald Trump, you knock 10 points off of his numbers right now. It's
if he gets a conviction,
where are these people coming from?
Yeah. One conviction, you can knock 5 to 10 points off, guaranteed. But at least we know that Donald Trump has got Laura Trump out there now as his surrogate to preach unity amongst Republicans. And that's a real relief. You know, we needed someone to have a cooler head and talk about bringing the party together with a positive message. I think with Lara, he's found it, Bob. Scorched earth, really.
Yeah.
Not since Carrie Lake insulted senior citizen Arizonans who had voted for McCain all those years have I seen a Republican have a more effective messaging for disaffected Republicans. The scorched earth second term. What do you make of Lara's positive messaging?
Well, she is among several who are just speaking out loud about what Donald Trump plans to do, or what they at least hope Donald Trump plans to do, although the plans are pretty much available to anyone to read, Project 2025, Agenda 47, et cetera. But with Lara Trump, she's talking about how Donald Trump's going to take office, and once he does, all bets are off, because it's going to be scorched earth. I mean, she actually used the term
scorched earth.
And the reason she said that he could get away with that is because he doesn't have to run for re-election again. And obviously we know that based on the 22nd Amendment, he can't technically run again in 2020.
Not yet, he can't.
If he wins, yeah. And then that's the big if. He has to win first in this year. But if he wanted to run again in 2028, he can't do that because of the 22nd Amendment. Or he's just going to ignore all of that and stay in office. And that's, you know, that's our worst nightmare. And something that I think is a valid concern that we all have based on everything that we've read so far and everything that we've witnessed.
I know this whole thing ends with the last scene of Scarface for this guy. So this talk doesn't scare me. This is like, this is like sweet music, but go on, please.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole idea is he can do whatever he wants because he will no longer be accountable to the American voters. And that's one of the things that will provide, a buffer for him. That's one of the things that will allow him to get away with all the things that he wants to do. It's crazy to say this, John, but his first term, he was actually restrained himself.
He was
a little bit knowing that he had to run again, knowing that he needed some sort of support from the American people. You know, he needed to get to 270 in the Electoral College in order to continue to serve, or not serve at all, continue to reign. But so in that regard, that actually restrained. And that always happens in the first term. Presidents are always restrained by the fact that they have to run again. So they don't want to go too far, piss off too many people. But when you're talking a second term, combine the second term itis that a normal president gets with Donald Trump and everything he plans to do, and it's a toxic combination for a second term. Now,
they should all boast it's going to be a scorched earth second term. I think, by the way, having an entire campaign based on vengeance is great for the Christian vote. I've always found that to be the case, but go on, please. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that's going to be one of the primary movers of a Trump second term is just a ridiculous amount of vengeance. They're just going they're talking about clearing house of the deep state. But I think based on what we witnessed with the first Donald Trump term and what preceded it and what came after it, Donald Trump's not really interested in necessarily digging into, jobs at the NSA or anything like that. I think to a certain extent, he's going to replace 50,000 people out of a 800,000 person, I forget the total job force size of the federal government, but 50,000 people is a lot of people. But granted, I think Donald Trump's primary enemy, the primary point of his vengeance, is going to be all the people who were mean to him all along. Anyone who was prosecuting him, anyone who was criticizing him in the press, anyone who was talking about his connections to Russia, et cetera, and Vladimir Putin, it's going to be all those people. That's what we're going to see. And I was watching a video. One of these guys, one of these pundits who was on a podcast. Now I'm blanking on the guy's name.
Narrow it down a bit, man. Yes.
Yeah, I know. It was one of the many. It was on I want to say Charlie Kirk's podcast. And this guy was saying, we're going for everyone. We're gonna deport 10 million people, including anchor babies, including their parents, including their grandparents. It'll be kids back in cages. And I think he was talking about, I think he was being a little bit facetious, but I don't know. It sounds like a threat more than anything else.
I mean, tell me how detention center is any different than concentration camp. That's what I'm trying to
figure out.
They want to have these camps with people they're deporting that they can concentrate them in one area, and they've got this great, it's really the ultimate solution, you know, maybe the last solution they have for this problem. Yeah. Bob, while I still have you, the TikTok ban, Biden apparently is going to sign it. I would bet cash money on two things. One, Donald Trump never actually does a day in jail. And two, there is never actually a TikTok ban that goes into effect. I cannot imagine Joe Biden signing this in an election year, knowing how unpopular it would be with young people. And quite honestly, I've believed for a long time this is Republicans trying to set a trap for this old man to walk into. Look at how Donald Trump just flipped like a crack house mattress a couple of months ago on this issue because of some donor money. What do you make of the TikTok ban?
Yeah, well, I know, and as you said, Donald Trump flip-flopped on this issue because in his final year in office in 2020, when we were all focused on the pandemic, Donald Trump signed an executive order to ban TikTok, essentially. It was, you know, I take that back. It was very similar to this legislation that was just passed that would have allowed TikTok a certain number of months to divest, or ByteDance would divest TikTok to some domestic entity like Microsoft or whatever. And if they didn't do that, then a ban would go into effect. Once that moratorium was over, then TikTok would get blocked inside the United States. However, I do think that there will be a buyer. There will be maybe a consortium of buyers who will come along and rescue it by buying TikTok from ByteDance. And so that will separate TikTok from the Chinese government. It'll separate TikTok from, you know, the prying eyes that are looking at people's user data allegedly inside ByteDance and TikTok. That's the allegation.
Why not have a law protecting people's privacy on all of these social media sites? Why only this one? You know what I mean? That's why I'm so suspect about the whole thing.
Well, there's some sort of national security threat involved in all of this, and they're not being clear exactly what that is. It's kind of vague given the extreme action that's been taken. And by the way, Joe Biden did sign that ban into effect.
Yes.
So again, it's not
there's
technically
months before
a ban yet, right? No,
yeah,
it's not.
Months
it's not
before
gonna
it would
be
go into effect.
Exactly right. So there's this period of time, much like Donald Trump's executive order. This law will allow ByteDance to sell TikTok to a company domestically. The thing with Donald Trump's action against TikTok is Joe Biden overturned that executive order when he took office because he wanted to take a closer look and see for himself what are the national security ramifications of this platform. And so he went ahead and did that. He had the Commerce Department investigate TikTok and look into any national security concerns, any FTC issues that might have come up. And also Congress was looking into it themselves. And so that's how we ended up here. And obviously, it's not the best politics. I think they think it's going to be okay, but I don't know. It's touchy.
Yeah, they found a way to kick the can down the road. Mr. Seska, you are the best at what you do. What is the best way for our listeners to follow you and keep up with your brilliance?
You can follow The Bob Seska Show anywhere you get your podcasts and at bobseskashow.com.
Thank you so much for joining us, Bob. You are the best. Have a great
evening.
Thanks,
my friend.
We got to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a moment with your calls. This is SiriusXM Progress, 866-997-4748.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Thank you. I'm Fuglesang. It is now time once again for another installment from AI Trump. Chris, do we have AI Trump loaded in? We previously brought you AI Trump talking about his erectile issues and AI Trump talking about his explosive colon problems. Now, the people behind AI Trump have released a new video called What Are You Going to Do? Give a listen.
Pretty soon, you penis heads are going to have to figure out what to do with the rest of your lives, because I'm going to lose the election and I'll be a convicted felon serving a prison sentence, and you crackpot MAGA jerkoffs are going to have to figure out what you're going to do. What are you going to do with all those ridiculous MAGA hats? And what are you going to do with all those stupid Trump flags with angry slogans like fuck your feelings and no more bullshit? All that crap you've bought over the years is going to be totally useless. I won't be running for anything because I'll be in prison. There won't be any more white trash rallies, and there won't be any psycho angry posts on True Social. I'll be too busy giving head to my cellmate, and I won't even have a phone anyway, so you'll never even hear my annoying voice anymore. There won't be any internet videos, no more courtroom bullshit, no more Fox News and Newsmax interviews, no more anything. I'll be gone away. The media won't have any more Looney Tunes shit to cover. It's going to be 100% radio silence from me. So what's your plan? Has it even crossed your withered mind what the fuck you're going to do when I'm locked away in a prison cell, out of sight and out of mind? No media coverage except maybe documentaries about what a criminal fuck up I was. So you MAGA-tards need to ask yourself a simple question. What are you going to do? You've wrapped your entire identity up in a moronic con man cult leader whose impossibly stupid life story will end in a matter of months in a predictably pathetic way. Total disgrace and a lifelong prison term. So what are you going to do?
Thank you, AI Trump. Wow. I just take off my scarf to whoever makes those. That's beautiful. It's just, it's the writing, you know, it's, they just hit all the right notes. 866-997-4748 is our number. We're going to be joined very shortly by Dr. Tracy Pearson. 866-997-GRIT. Let me go to Mike in Michigan on line 2, who's been on hold just forever. Mike, thank you for your patience. You're on progress.
AI Trump, that's great. Hey, this day, AI Trump, unbelievable. That was great. But
yeah.
This day in music history, 1968, a guy at 69 years old made number one in UK.
Who's that?
That was Ray Charles. It's a Wonderful World.
No, that was Louis Armstrong. Ray Charles wasn't 68 years old in the 1960s. Right. You're thinking Louis Armstrong.
Louis Armstrong. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Wow.
We'll accept that answer. Very good.
Anyway, that's crazy. But
I was wait a second. Louis Ray Charles. I saw Ray Charles. He would have been 90 by the time I saw him if he was that old back then.
Yeah.
But God bless Satchmo.
Yeah. I wanted to see if we answer this question about when Jesus said he can only be saved through me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what they thought of that, I think it's more than just through him as even, I think there's more to that.
Well, there is a lot more to it. Yeah. What do you think there is to it?
I think it means to walk in his walk, you know.
I do too.
Word and to become that, okay, become what he's talking about, not just through him as a being, okay, but through his teaching.
Yeah.
And anyway.
But again, you know why people cite this all the time? People cite this all the time to argue that non-Christians go to hell, that right. Muslims and Hindus and Jews and atheists and all the Indians, they're all burning in hell for all eternity because God and Jesus hate them. And this line has been so twisted over the years to really, really be exclusionary. And it's in John 14, right? Where Jesus says, no one comes to the Father but through me.
Yeah.
And the whole time he's saying, I'm the way and the truth. He's saying, like, don't let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe in me. My Father's house has many rooms, which I always took to be about diversity. You know, if I go and prepare a place for you, I'll come back and take you to be with me. It's Jesus saying, I'll be with you all the time. And he says, no one comes to the Father except through me. If you really know me, you'll know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. So my question, when people bring this up to say that only Christians go to heaven, I say, well, what does that mean? No one comes to the Father except through me. I ask my fundamentalist friends, does that mean we have to physically pass through Jesus's body, like find, like go through his rib cage and physically go through his physical form to get to God.
Exactly.
And if that's not the case, then he's speaking metaphorically. If you really know me, you will know. Well, he died 2,000 years before most of us were born, so how could we really know him? Oh, he's speaking metaphorically. He's not speaking literally. So his whole ministry was about love. He wasn't a Christian, just like Buddha wasn't a Buddhist. Jesus' religion was love. And when he talks about everything, it is grounded through love. You have to interpret his scripture through the prism of love. That is the new covenant. It is not the fire and brimstone God anymore. It is the God of acceptance, forgiveness, and compassion. That is what right-wing people can't stand about the religion they pretend to follow. So when he is saying, no one comes to the Father through me, he's saying, if you don't love, you're not going to get to heaven. And I kind of think if there is a heaven, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Hey, just my favorite scripture is... not John 3:16 like you see on the football games.
No, John. But even that one, for God so loved the world. They forget that one part, love the world. Didn't just love this one part of the world. Didn't just love this one God fan club. God so loved the entire world. But go ahead.
Right. My favorite one is right after that, John 3:17. For he sent not his son into the world to condemn the world, but through his son, some it may be saved. And he sent not his son to condemn.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of Christians do, condemn this and condemn that.
That's fundamentalism. That's not Christians. That's the fundamentalist wing of all religions. The more conservative, the more extreme conservative anybody of any religion is, the more it's all about the inferiority and sin and condemnation of others. It's not about, and the more liberal a Muslim or a Jew or a Christian you are, doesn't matter the religion, the more it is about the welcoming the stranger, caring for the less fortunate, being there for other people. I swear to God, the extreme conservative Christians, Muslims, and Jews are the same religion. Women second class. Sex is bad unless it's for procreation. Other religions are inferior. Perpetual victimhood. And it's always, always about sin, never about healing.
That's why I don't agree with what they're doing over in Israel against Palestine. I mean,
I don't either. I want Israel to be safe. I want Israel to have a neighbor that recognizes their right to exist. And I want Palestine to be safe. And I want Palestine to have control of their own borders and be a free, independent state. Israel move into Palestine as an emerging market and help their economy start. I mean, there's so many nonviolent ways this can play out. It's just a lot of people who are willing to kill for God need to realize that if God wanted anyone dead, he'd smite them himself. It appears God wants us to get along despite our differences.
Yeah, I don't know if you're going to have the indigenous folks on tomorrow, but
yes, with Simon and Julie will be here.
Wonder if you could ask them about Buffy St. Marie or Grey
Owl.
We've
talked about Buffy a lot. Buffy, a lot of people's hearts are broken over Buffy, including me, because she's been on the show.
How about Grey Owl?
I'll talk about Grey Owl. Okay, yeah, ask, or you call in and talk about Grey Owl.
Yeah, I want you to ask them about Grey Owl and see what, because that was not just a movie, it was a true story about a British guy who became an American Indian.
Oh, yeah, Pierce Brosnan did it, right?
Yeah, that's a good movie and a good story.
Why don't you call in tomorrow night when Simon and Julie are here and you bring it up. I promise I'll put you on, okay?
Give it a try. Okay.
All right, man. Thank you so much. 866-997-4748 is our number. Dr. Tracy Pearson joins us in just a moment. Rob in Orlando on line 4. Thank you so much for your patience on hold, Rob. You're on Sirius XM.
Hi, John.
Hello. Hello.
How are you, sir?
Good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. John, I understand you don't like Israel.
That's not true, sir. That's not true at all. And when have I ever said that?
Well, you don't like Netanyahu.
I do not like Netanyahu, and I don't like his policies, and he hasn't made Israel safer. No.
Well, John,
I don't like the. By the way, I don't like the leadership. I don't like the leadership of Palestine. I don't like the leadership of Iran. I don't like the leadership of Russia. But I love Palestinian, Iranian, and Russian people.
It's good. Yes, you should.
Yeah.
And, you know, but Hamas is terrorist. So
they are.
Yes. So who cares if they're starving them?
Are the children terrorists, my friend? Are the children? There's 13,000 children that have been killed in this. Are the children terrorists? Does your pro-life sentiment extend to them? So you're not pro-life when it comes to Palestinian civilians?
All Muslims are terrorists. All of them.
That is not true, and whether you don't believe that.
What? I do.
You don't believe that. Is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar a terrorist? Is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar a terrorist, sir?
He supports a religion that is terrorist.
Islam is not terrorism. Yeah. Why don't I? Then Christianity is about conquest and plunder. I should compare Christianity. Christianity is the religion of Hitler and the Crusades. I mean, I can play this as well. It's vulgar and offensive. And yeah, look, you just don't like Muslims. That's fine. You don't have to like Muslims, but don't go talking bullshit that it's a religion of terrorism. It's not. There's Christian terrorists. There's Jewish terrorists. There's Muslim terrorists. And you're smart enough to know it. Come on. Hate them on your own terms.
John, there's no such thing as a Christian terrorist.
Hitler was a Christian. When you shoot an abortion clinic doctor, you are a Christian terrorist. Yes, that's terrorism, dude. Dude, terrorism is violence or the threat of violence to bring about policy. So if you're killing abortion doctors, you're a terrorist. Hitler was Christian. He said our movement is Christian. We can do this all day. It is the extreme right wing of all the religions that does it. I don't think you've had the chance to know a lot of liberal Muslims, but if you did, you wouldn't feel the way you do. I've been blessed to know plenty of liberal and moderate Muslims. So I'm not angry at what you're saying because I know it's not true. I'm sorry?
My neighbor is a Muslim. My neighbor is a Muslim.
Do you call him a terrorist to his face?
I don't talk to him.
Would you call him a terrorist to his face?
If I ever wanted to talk to him, but I don't want to.
Now, based on what has your neighbor done that makes you call, what has your neighbor done that makes you feel this way about your neighbor?
Well, John, you don't say certain things to some people's faces. I mean,
what has your neighbor done that makes you dislike them so much?
John,
please, how has
John,
your neighbor treated you?
If you're going to be racist, John, you've got to be racist in private. Come on, you don't.
I know, but
what
has the neighbor done that makes you hate them? Serious question. What have they done?
I don't hate him. I just
you don't talk to him.
You know. Yeah, but that doesn't mean
if you're calling a radio show to brag that you don't talk to your Muslim neighbor, that's a lot of contempt. What have they done?
How do you even know that he's Muslim?
Because he wears the little turban thing, and he's got a long beard.
Dude, your neighbor's Sikh.
Oh my God, he's a Sikh.
Dude, your neighbor's a Sikh, not a Muslim. Holy shit. Why do we have to have the stupidest racist, Chris?
Muslim, Sikh, they're all the same thing.
Oh, hang up. We're done, Rob. Rob, listen, if you're going to be a bigot, try not to embarrass the rest of us. There's educated bigots out there that deserve a better representative for the racism cause than you, please. This is the thing about white supremacists, man. They always disprove the argument. His neighbor's Sikh. Muslims don't wear turbans, you racist douchebag. Oh, it was going so well, too.
What a cell phone. Thank
oh,
you.
I
thank
love
you
it.
For that.
Can we turn that into a promo? Can any
can
part
try.
Of that be turned into a promo?
I honestly feel so much better now, Rob. Thank you.
I always like recoil. Like, what's Rob going to say this time? Because I don't hate Rob. I have family like Rob. But wow.
I just love public embarrassment. It's great.
We have to take a break. I'm so sorry, Rob. I would love to have you on to create a noose for you more. Call back anytime, sweetie. 866-997-4748. We'll be right back with Dr. Tracy Pearson. Turban.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. We are at 866-997-4748. We welcome all of our callers, even racists who can't tell which religion they're hating. That was just a beautiful moment. It hangs in the air like the smell of Trump when he leaves a courtroom. The scent lingers. 866-997-4748. Really quick, before we bring in Dr. Tracy, Joe Biden has said the aid is leaving for Ukraine ASAP.
I'm making sure the shipments start right away. In the next few hours, literally the few hours, we're going to begin sending in equipment to Ukraine for air defense munitions, for artillery, for rocket systems, and armored vehicles.
There we go. Now, would you please welcome back to the show Dr. Tracy Pearson, legal analyst and consultant you've seen on TV and radio and podcasts. She's been quoted everywhere from Forbes to the New York Post to Fast Company and all over your TV from Cheddar News to News Nation. We are so blessed to have our airwaves classed up every Wednesday by Dr. Tracy. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I am always happy to be here on Wednesdays because you cheer me up. And I have to say that today was one of those days where I wanted to get on top of my house and scream. And then I heard your last caller and I laughed my ass off during the entire call. So I have to say there are some moments of levity with all of this, even though what he said was absolutely abominable.
That's the thing about racists, as wretched and awful and revoltingly fake Christian as their comments may be. We don't give them enough credit for all the laughs they've provided us over the Nazis and the Blues Brothers alone. You know, like fascists are great for comedy. And I'm grateful for that. Yeah,
indeed. Indeed.
His Muslim neighbor with the turban and the beard. I love racists. They're always so consistent.
Tracy, why? I was going to say this is a man who needs to watch some W. Kamau Bell shows where he exposes you to different people and cultures. Man, he really needs some Kamau Bell.
I'm sure he can't wait for that. Tracy, I have to ask, as a concerned bystander, what was it that put you on the roof of your house screaming into the abyss this morning? I mean, it's been a pretty interesting week so far, and there's been all kinds of sources of amusement for me. But what is getting to you today?
What's getting to me today is that, you know, I've lived a lot of different lives. I have had a lot of different careers in my short, you know, very 20 years old self joke. But I have had a lot of different careers. And one of those was working with university administration in misconduct cases as an investigator. And I am livid. Absolutely livid about the discourse that's being put out there about students and protesting. Like my family, my great grandfather, my grandfather, my father all served in the military, and they didn't put their lives on the line to not have the right to protest. I think that if you are a university president, particularly Carol Folt over at USC, who feels the need to call in the LAPD in a full, you know, militarized, you know, equipment and marches 100 or so of these people in to take care of some people that are in a confined area of campus who are chanting. That says more about Carol than it says about those people who are protesting the use of their tuition dollars for the war machine in Israel. And I think that that it's disgusting. And even more disgusting is I'm following some reporters, and one of the reporters just posted that they tried to talk to the LAPD who was arresting these students, and they wouldn't talk to them because they said it was a USC DPS operation. And that, to me, is the first signal that that, you know, that is an attempt to avoid liability, because in the state of California, private university students have a First Amendment right to freedom of speech in the same way that public students do under what's called Leonard Law. And so I'm already watching the shifting of, you know, the finger pointing, if you will. And I just, I think it is, you know, they didn't want to have a big stinking problem when they canceled this poor, you know, valedictorian speech. They bought a problem, and the problem that they bought is bigger than the problem that they perceived to have. And so they just do, they do a lot of things, and universities all across the country are doing bad things. What happened in Texas today was bad. What happened in Columbia was bad the other day. You don't have to sick anyone with a gun on your students.
I have been quoting tonight an NYPD chief, John Schell, who told the Columbia student newspaper last week when they arrested 100 protesters, the students were that were arrested were peaceful, offered no resistance whatsoever, and were saying what they wanted to say in a peaceful manner. What makes me crazy about this, and you're right, I also seem to remember from my Constitution comic book, citizens having the right to peacefully assemble and petition the government for redress of grievances. I seem to remember something about that. And what makes me crazy is the hypocrisy of the Republicans and the media. On the Republican side, we have folks who aren't making any effort whatsoever to get American Jews to like their platform. You got Donald Trump, who goes attacking American Jews every other day with dual loyalty. You've got the Candace Owens praising Hitler, the Charlie Kirks attacking the Jews and Jewish dollars. You've got these straight up Hitler fans like Milo Yiannopoulos and Donald Trump's Thanksgiving buddies, Nick Fuentes and Kanye West. These are the people showing up now, like Elon Musk making Twitter a Nazi space. And they're pretending to be really laser focused on fighting anti-Semitism. Mike Johnson didn't go there because he cares about anti-Semitism. He went there to try to win back the votes and support of bigots who don't like him passing a deal for Ukraine by wagging his finger at these swarthy brown people and Muslim lovers and college students in New York City. And even worse than him is the mainstream media, because I began the show tonight by talking about how you've got this response of Netanyahu, where 32,000 civilians are now dead, half of them children. They're murdering the World Central Kitchen workers, and they're deliberately using starvation as a weapon of war. And the media is not covering it. The media is covering some obnoxious college brats protesting it, not the actual war crimes. The media is focused on these unseemly protests of the war crimes. And that, to me, is the worst part of our media culture. You know, they can't come out and cover the plight of the Palestinian people while still acknowledging that Hamas are Nazi bastards. They've got to come out and talk about these awful people supporting them. That's the closest you'll get to the truth in most of our corporate media.
And you won't get facts. I mean, you won't get facts about the party that Netanyahu belongs to, the party that, or rather the terrorist organization that became the Likud party. You won't get any information about the fact that that terrorist organization, Lehi, has a military ribbon named after it. And they called them the Freedom Fighters because their purpose was to create an Israeli state through terrorism, through violence. And on top of that, they also had a weekly or biweekly publication called Hamas. I'm not kidding. Like, I have been spending a lot of time. Oh, yes. I have been spending a lot of time doing a lot of reading. And I have to say that the facts, these are facts. These aren't Dr. Tracy opinions. These are historical facts. And, you know, when Israel was in the process of being created on a piece of paper, you had British ministers being assassinated. You had the first mediator to the conflict between the Arab population and creating this country. And that person was assassinated both by Lehi. They all the other countries were a bit upset about this. And so what happens is the country that would become Israel, so I'm just going to refer to it as Israel, that they said, okay, all right, because this deal was pending. Okay. So what we'll do is we'll name them terrorists, okay? And so they named them terrorists and they executed a couple people. The guy who was in charge fled the country. And then what happened was that guy got sent a passport. After the ink was dry on the deed to Israel, they then go and give Lehi amnesty. And that guy who fled the country comes back with this passport, enters the country, and eventually becomes prime minister.
Wow.
and he ends up helping to form the Likud party. You know, there's so much about this that when I see and I hear things, I'm enraged, because the techniques and the rhetorical strategies and all of these things are being turned around and used on people who, you know, the people in Gaza, they are the most vulnerable people that exist right now, because and when you compare all these populations, because they literally can't fight back. I mean, they really can't fight back. They've all been herded into the city.
They can't get food. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it's just infuriating when I see college students who are responsibly engaged in protest under our constitution, our state constitutions, under their policies. I mean, when you look at university policies, tell me what the process is for them to go protest, because people say, well, they got to follow the policy. And yes, they can name time, manner, and place. Yep, you can. But what's the process that you have that students can then go apply for a, quote, permit, like you might do in Washington, D.C.? You can't find it. There's just a lot of manipulation of infrastructure to prevent people from advocating for the weakest people. And it is, you know, it's the thing that put me on the roof today. That I wanted to scream as loud as I could, because I couldn't figure out how to manage the rage that I had over what was happening.
I totally get it. I mean, and I want to point out once again, you know, anyone chanting death to America, anyone who's pro Hamas, well, they're douchebags and they suck, but that's still legal to do in this country under our First Amendment. If someone is hurting someone or trying to hurt someone in any way, well, then they are subject to the laws of the city they're in, and they're subject to the rules of their university. So I have no problem with saying someone commits an act of violence or violates the law, lock them up. Someone breaks the policies of the university, sanction them, suspend them, expel them, whatever you want to do. But this is still, for the most part, a largely nonviolent free speech exercise. It's just that the speech is not altogether popular. I want to play a quick clip here from earlier today. This is A6. NSA chief Jake Sullivan told reporters that the U.S. is now demanding answers from Israel this time. And I know, demanding answers, wow, how powerful, regarding the mass graves discovered at two Gaza hospitals. A6.
They've made a number of commitments in terms of what they need to do on the ground in order to receive the aid that they're getting from the United States. With the reports that we've seen of mass graves at two medical facilities in Gaza that they destroyed, is it your current view that they are living up to those commitments?
Well, those reports were deeply disturbing. We have been in touch at multiple levels with the Israeli government. We want answers. We want to understand exactly what happened. You've seen some public commentary from the IDF on that, but we want to know the specifics of what the circumstances of this were, and we want to see this thoroughly and transparently investigated.
As we talk about all this, Tracy, this is the day that Joe Biden signed off to send $25 billion more to Israel to help them slaughter these people. And there's several million in there for the people being slaughtered. So, you know, my math is not great, but I think billions weigh more than millions. And I think we know this is going to play out a certain way with more or less bloody bipartisan support.
Well, and I think that one of the things that I've been saying all along is that Joe Biden needed to have that money in his hands in order to have some negotiating power.
I don't think it's so. He thing, just sent it. Just sent. Here it is. One lump sum.
I think he needs to have that money in his hands to have some negotiating power. And I think that we have to be really careful about that money, because a ceasefire resolution was passed by the UN, and so the Security Council. And there's been allegations. Israel is still under investigation for war crimes before we even discovered these mass graves. And so, you know, if our resources are being used to further those unlawful objectives, we can get into some trouble, and and we don't want to do that. And so I think that that's important to sort of understand all of that. I have never, once Israel became fully self-sufficient, I never understood why they needed our money. They've got more companies on the NASDAQ than any other country in the world.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't even know how many but it's at double digits. And I they have extraordinary technology. I mean, we don't have a dome. Do we have a dome? I've never heard of a dome.
I also just don't understand. I mean, I get that they're our allies, but I have never been able to understand why Israeli lives matter more than Palestinian lives to me.
Well, and are they our allies when they're causing almost World War III's with people in that region? I don't know.
And I always try to separate the Netanyahu civilian regime from the Israeli people. And I think the Israeli people may separate the Netanyahu regime from the Israeli people very soon. I do want to get to the calls, and I want to ask you about gag orders, because we should have some levity here. Let me try Stephen in New Mexico on line 5. Stephen in New Mexico, thank you so much for your patience. You're on SiriusXM Progress. Hello.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi. Hey. Nice to meet you, Dr. Tracy. I'm right there with you, girl. Well said. Well said. How you doing, Brother John?
I'm happy you're here, man. It's all better now. How are you feeling?
I'm doing okay, although I feel a little bit like Dr. Tracy today. I think the students are getting a bad rap. How you doing, Chris?
Chris.
Well, anyway.
Terrible.
Listen,
Chris is deep into the pills and booze by now,
about.
Sir.
I've got something to discuss with you, John.
Okay.
I understand you and your wife have a really nice place there in New York.
Okay.
Gilded, golden, everything.
God came to me last night, John, and he told me I could have your place.
Okay.
And I'm going to hop on a
God
plane
said so, yeah.
at the end
I mean,
of the week.
I,
and
no, if God said
York,
so, I can't argue with that.
I'm hoping you can have all of your stuff out by the weekend. I do have a 16-gauge shotgun.
Can I keep a little tiny part of the place I've lived in all these years that my family and I can live in squalor in, just so we're not completely cast out to the elements since we were here first?
I think God wants me to have the whole thing. That's what he told me.
Oh, not even a little tiny spit of land? You're sure? There's like parts of the yard I could just, you know, put some tarp up and live there. It's
John, you don't understand.
The same.
I'm God's chosen person.
Oh, right. I'm so sorry. I keep forgetting. Right. Because I actually think I'm God's chosen person, too. So I guess once you do this, I'll get to blow up your children and your children's children, and we'll all argue who's the good guy.
I don't know, man. I think it's all about Zionism. They not only think they're better than the Palestinians, they think they're better than the Americans, you know?
Not all of them think that. Not all of them think that. You know that's not true. There's lots of progressive and moderate Israelis who are wonderful people and are really turned off by what they're seeing. You know that.
I'm not talking about them, John. And I think there's a difference between Zionism and Judaism.
Okay, I understand. I get what you're saying.
I see Zionism as... The manifest destiny, the whole, you know, God's chosen people thing, it's sick, and I think it's infecting our country. The Christian Zionists,
oh, very much so.
Jewish Zionists are working together to create hell on earth. And,
it's not the Jewish side. No, it is the American evangelical community that is not interested in the teachings of Jesus, but they're really high on rapture fiction. And that's why they care about Israel, because they need flaming, angry Jesus to come back in their Bible fan fiction and kill half the Jews and make the other half convert. That's the only reason these folks care about Israel.
And you're describing dispensationalism and the Scofield Bible and all that, you know, end of the world stuff.
Yeah,
and
the word rapture
really
doesn't appear in the Bible. Yeah.
What's that?
The word rapture doesn't appear in the Bible. This is all bullshit that they've concocted in the centuries since. And again, you know, this is Christians who think that God gave them the book of Revelation and that it's not some guy tripping his face off in a cave, but actually giving orders about stuff. And so it's the same kind of corrosive right-wing religion leading to suffering.
Yeah, yeah. And it's closely related to settler colonialism. It's all the same thing.
Manifest
destiny. I've told you before, I've been doing ceremony with the Lakota for about 25 years, and they turned me on to a word they use. the word is, what is the word? Wetico. Wetico. And
Medico?
That is their description of the Western illness that creates settler colonialism, Zionism, genocide, racism. They wrap all of that into that one word, and it's really something everybody should know.
I get it.
But
Then what's the solution? Is it a two-state solution, or is it, I mean, more and more, I don't know how you could ever have a two-state solution when you look at the West Bank. I think it's got to be a one-state solution that is a democratic state where there is no apartheid and there is equality and where they have to live side by side.
I think it has to be, I understand that this is controversial, but the one-state solution almost seems to be the thing that might be able to work, because when you think about how Israel responds to attacks historically, what they have chosen to do, and I can talk about this some more at another time, but what they choose to do is fight the battle on the enemy's territory. And that's why when you look at the map of the region as it's changed over time, prior to 48 and after 48, what you see is that land disappearing for the Palestinians. And,
the same
and
thing happened
that is
to the Cheroee in Georgia.
Yeah, and
that's
again,
part
you,
of the strategy.
You can't you can't assume these people are going to be compliant for the rest of time. Chris?
There's a lot. I don't agree with a lot of what's being said right now.
Well, okay, well, please tell me. Weigh in, Chris, because listen, I think the Jews, certainly the Jewish people are the most oppressed people in the history of the earth. They deserve to have a homeland where they are safe and have neighbors who recognize their right to exist. And the Palestinian people deserve the same thing. They deserve to have their own independent state with control of their own borders. But please, Chris.
Neither of the groups that you just mentioned would want or ever endorse a one-state solution.
Oh, I know. More I look at the geography of the West Bank, the more I think there's no way you're ever going to make a second state there.
And
they're not embracing a two-state solution either.
Correct. I know.
They just want the other one to disappear. And so
I know.
And the entire region gets very upset when Western people
I'm not imposing anything. I'm just a clown with a radio show.
As far as the shifting borders goes, I mean, that all happened after invasions in which the invading people lost, and as a concession of war, they gave up land in a treaty in 67 and 72 and 48. Like, that's what happened. So
I have a video to recommend to you guys. It's called The Hidden History of Israel. It's a conversation with Jewish professor Avi Shlaim, someone I've been following for about 20 years. I used to write about these things, by the way. I cut my journalistic teeth writing about Israel and Palestine, and I started off with a story about the USS Liberty, the intelligence ship that was attacked by the Israelis in 1967.
But Stephen, I mean, I have to ask you, though, do you agree that the people of Israel deserve to live in peace and security with neighbors who recognize their right to exist? I don't think that's asking too much.
It's not, but I want to remind you that From the River to the Sea was a Zionist trope.
I know, and both sides say it. I know.
They are committed to moving the Palestinians off the land they think God has given them.
I have come to believe that some of them are doing that, absolutely. Tracy, I'll give you the last word, then we got to hit our break.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not against a two-state solution, but both parties have to be willing to cooperate. This isn't Ireland and Northern Ireland. I mean, look, it took a long time for that to figure it out. They finally figured it out, and things are working out, and I knock on something here. Okay.
Oh, no, I agree. I just don't think I don't see how the way the settlements are in the West Bank, I don't see how you would have to have a border that it was like 500 little circles.
They have to get out of there. I just recommended.
Okay, I'll check it out, man. Thank you. So, Dr. Tracy, here's the question, right? Yesterday, you missed the night of 1,000 pecker jokes, but this gag order and the violations of it, it's really irrefutable that Donald Trump has violated his gag order multiple times. The only thing that's up for debate is why he's doing it. There seems to be some kind of strategy related to getting a mistrial or getting this thing delayed. But what should we know about gag order violations?
Well, what we're talking about is contempt, and there's two kinds of contempt. There's civil contempt and criminal contempt. And civil contempt is about preventative behavior, sort of coercing somebody into doing the right thing. So, for example, you know, you owe child support, you should pay child support. You didn't pay child support, we find you in contempt in a way right. to compel somebody to do something. Criminal contempt is all about punishment. And so it is about holding someone accountable and doling out consequences for misconduct. And there's sort of two kinds of criminal contempt. There's indirect and direct contempt. Direct contempt being something that the judge personally sees in the courtroom. Indirect contempt being something that he doesn't see in the courtroom, but that is told to him. And so what we're dealing with here is criminal contempt that's indirect, and that the DA has brought a motion to show cause, which requires that that you know they show cause for and it's interesting in New York how they do this. In other jurisdictions, it would be Donald Trump would have to show cause for why he was not in contempt. But here, the DA says they've got the burden. That tells me a lot. That tells me that they're treating it like a crime, because contempt is a crime in New York. There's two ways to get there. One is through the penal code. The other way is through the judicial code. And so they have the same elements to them. But a judge can find you in contempt of court. And the two that we've all been talking about this, there's two ways of dealing with it. One is payment of a fine. The other is incarceration. Incarceration gets fun because there's other things that he can do. He doesn't just have to incarcerate him for 30 days. He can incarcerate him from Monday through Friday and let him weekends.
But he wouldn't want to incarcerate, because wouldn't that slow down the trial? I mean, would it be more reasonable to sentence him to jail time, but then have a stay on the jail time until the end of the trial, so he would know he was going to jail no matter what for contempt, and then he could rack up more miles if he wanted to between now and then?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it slows down the trial at all. In fact, they'll bring him to court and put him in regular clothes. It just means that at the end of the day, he goes off to whatever facility that they're going to put him in. So he can't appeal that, from what I understand, because the trial has already started. So, it's not going to slow anything down. There's already been a jury impaneled, and a mistrial is when there's something that's happened that's so incredibly unfair to the process that would lead somebody to contend that it was impacting the outcome.
So what do you see happening here? I mean, he has to do something against this guy, and $1,000 of violations, a drop in the bucket for Donald Trump. How do you see it playing out?
I've got two theories. First of all, it's all based on the fact that, in my experience with this stuff, if he was going to give a fine, he would do it from the bench. He doesn't need to take the time to think about it. Okay. So what he's doing is crafting a very detailed written order. And there are a couple of theories. I think one of the more likely ones is that he's going to issue sort of a springing order, which is he's going to say that, you know, you're going to get 30 days in jail, suspended. And if you engage in one more act that law enforcement is authorized to take you into custody and to bring you before me and to have a hearing on whether I should find that you have violated the terms of this suspension. And if I do, then you will go and serve those 30 days.
Do you think that's going to really happen in this case, though?
I think it's a strong possibility. I've been reading the transcripts, which, you know, God love New York state courts. I'm so grateful for these transcripts. I wish they were coming out the same day, though. If there's a way to tweak it, that would be wonderful. But I've been reading them, and some of them are hilarious. And just the way the judge is reacting to Blanche and Blanche is reacting to the judge. He's talking and the judge asks this question. He's like, so as far as the whole distinction between repost, you stated it's ambiguous. You stated you didn't know. But again, I hate to come back to this, but you're not offering me anything to support your argument, Mr. Blanche. But Your Honor, the court, I'm not done. You're not giving me anything to hang my hat on to say, yeah, you're right, et cetera, and so on. I mean, and it goes on like this.
It was crazy. When the judge says to the defense lawyer, you've presented nothing, that's not a good sign, right? You're losing all credibility with the court. That's not a good sign, is it?
It's not a good sign. That's sort of a warning. It's a, you know, you're going a little bit too far afield trying to advocate for your client. But I think that, you know, I have some sympathy for Blanche now, because he really has nothing. And I've been in that spot where I've got nothing.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I've got nothing. I'm fighting out of a foxhole trying to keep my client alive.
Oh, he's got something. He's got the tattered remains of his reputation as a former Democrat who decided to cash in by taking money from Donald Trump. Tracy Pearson, you're the best. How do our listeners follow you and keep up with your work?
You can find me everywhere at Tracy Explains. I have a website, TracyExplains.com. I have a Substack, Dr. Tracy Explains, and I encourage people to follow me there.
Guys, thank you. If we didn't get to your call tonight, I'm so sorry. I promise we will take your call tomorrow, and you can yell at me for whatever reason. Thank you, Chris and Thea. We'll see you tomorrow. Peace.